Well, the Feast of Trumpets is now past. We're heading for the Day of Atonement, 1 week away, and it is only 11 days until the Feast of Tabernacles. That's amazing. It's hard to imagine. It seems like we just recently finished the feast, and here we are ready to begin another Feast of Tabernacles. I appreciate the In Accord. I watched it last night. We also played that in Bakersfield this morning for the sermonette time. It ties in very well with what I want to speak on today, and in fact, overlaps in several ways. Are you ready for the feast? Some of you may say, I'm always ready for the feast. I would love to go any time of the year for the Feast of Tabernacles. And again, some people are always ready. Others do the countdown, waiting for the days to pass and being ready. And when I ask, are you ready, I don't mean, are you packed? That's one thing. I usually wait. I used to pack ahead of time, and I would have my suitcase out and ready to go in advance and start packing it up. And now I wait, and usually takes me about 15, 20 minutes thinking and looking, packing what I need, and I'm ready to go. Now, the other supplies that the feast supplies and everything else for services, begin working on earlier in the year. We'll be taking those things down. But when I say, are you ready? I don't mean, are you packed and ready? And I don't mean, have you purchased your food, bought clothes, got the car ready? Mr. Horchek talked about the travel and having to go further distances. Even here, when we think about going to San Diego, it's not that far. It could take an hour and a half to 3 or 4 hours based on traffic. But it is having a car ready. And if you're traveling other places, having travel arrangements ready. But I don't mean, are we physically ready? Are you ready for the feast? Let's turn over to Leviticus chapter 23. And there are a few verses that will overlap with what was in the In Accord. But it is verses that are important to cover when looking at preparation for ourselves for the feast. Leviticus chapter 23 and verse 34. He says, speak to the children of Israel, saying, in the 15th day of the 7th month, there shall be a feast of tabernacles for 7 days to the Lord. And this is mentioned several times. As we go through this passage, you're going to see, he says, this is a feast for 7 days. On the first day, there shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. And for 7 days, you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. And on the 8th day, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. It is a sacred assembly, and you shall do no customary work on it. He says in verse 37, these are the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations. Now, when he lists the feast in other places, and he said, these are my feasts, and he begins with the Sabbath day. The Sabbath day itself is a holy convocation. The feast is commanded. Some, over the years, look at the feast a little bit differently than others, and some look at it in a casual way, saying, well, if I can afford to go this year, I will go. The feast is commanded. There are some in the times past who only said, well, it's only important that you make it on the first day and the last day, on the holy days. The other days, you can still go back and you can work. You can do whatever on the days in between if you can't make it. But as long as you make the holy days, then you have kept the feast. Again, thinking that the feast is only the high days and that the 7 days in between are not the same. But God makes it clear here and in other places that this is a sacred assembly and a holy convocation for this period. The word holy means sacred, hallowed, or set apart. But what we see, when we see what is set apart or what is holy, he said the convocation is holy. We realize when we go down to San Diego or individuals will fly to Hawaii, Hawaii doesn't become holy when we're there. San Diego doesn't become holy. The hotel that we use, the Crown Plaza this year, will not be holy. But the congregation and the convocation, the gathering together, is what is holy. So God says it is a holy gathering. We don't use the word convocation very often, and Strong's Exhaustive Concordance says this Hebrew word here means something called out, a public meeting or an assembling. So he says the feast and these high days are holy assemblies. They're holy calling out of individuals to one place to be together. And so the feast is a holy gathering. It's a sacred gathering of those that God has called out, especially here in the end of the age. It's not just particular high days that are holy and sacred. God's feast days are holy, which includes the 7 days. And again, we see multiple times listed here. He says the feast is 7 days long. And again, it is for the called out people of God. Too many people have taken that lightly in the past, and some even may today, like the days of unleavened bread. They say, well, since you only have a holy day at the beginning and the end, and you can work in between, you just have to refrain from eating leaven. That's the way the feast is. The feast is a little bit different in the command. Let's look at lesson number one, or something that we can learn from in being ready for the feast, is that God's feast is commanded. Unless it's for health or another reason, we are commanded to be there. It is a gathering together in one place, and God says that gathering of people in one place is holy. Leviticus chapter 23 and verse 39. He says, on the 15th day of the 7th month, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep a feast of the Lord for 7 days. On the first day there shall be a Sabbath rest, and on the 8th day a Sabbath rest. So it says, keep a feast to the Lord for that 7 days. Keep is a word we can say, well, just keep the feast. We're going to keep the feast. And we ask the question of individuals going elsewhere, where are you going to keep the feast? This word keep means celebrate, practice. And I like this one, to be giddy or to observe. We observe the feast, and it says for 7 days. But to be giddy, almost like where it says God loves a cheerful giver. It's a similar word that means giddy, somebody who is uplifted and happy. And so God says he wants us to observe in a positive, joyous way the feast for that 7-day period. We're to celebrate it for 7 days. And again, it's clear it is to be in the place that he's chosen. Verse 40, he says, you shall take for yourselves on the first day, the fruit of the beautiful trees. Now it gives a description of how the children of Israel were to keep it in a physical way. What they were to do in learning how to keep this feast. He said, branches of palm trees, boughs of leafy trees, willows and brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days for the feast period. So we're commanded to rejoice, but we're also commanded to take these and build, as we understand it, booths. You shall keep it a feast to the Lord for 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the 7th month. He said, you shall dwell in booths for 7 days. Well, that eliminates, well, I can dwell in the booth for the first holy day and the last holy day, but the others aren't really needed. He says, you dwell in that temporary dwelling, and that's what the word booth means, for 7 days. And all who are native Israel shall dwell in booths or temporary dwellings. Now, why do we dwell in temporary dwellings? Is it just because, well, it's not in the hometown that we live in? No, he says here, why? Verse 43. Here's why we dwell in temporary dwellings. That your generations may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths. He said, I want you to remember what they had to go through, and that life is temporary, and that you're going to dwell in a temporary setting for this 7-day period. So he said, they dwelled in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So Moses declared to the children of Israel the feasts of the Lord. These are not the church's feasts. They're not simply traditions where let's come up with an 8-day period that people would be excited to go to. They are commanded and they are given to us by God. Let's look a little bit further at the description of how it is to be kept. Deuteronomy 14. Deuteronomy chapter 14 and verse 22. Deuteronomy 14 and verse 22. You shall truly tithe of the increase of your grain in the field that it produces year by year. Number two, the tithe. to even be able to keep the feast is also commanded. Again, over the time, individuals have come up with their own ideas. Well, how much do I need to set aside to keep the feast? Or we're going to go this year because we've set aside enough. No, God says there is a tithe. It's to be set apart. And it enables us to be able to follow that command. We keep the command of tithing, you'll be able to keep the command of being at the feast. Second tithe is not optional. And so God ensured a way for his people to be able to be a part of that holy gathering. But notice what he says to do with the tithe. He says in verse 23, you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide. The tithe of the grain, of your new wine, of the oil, the firstborn of your herds and of the flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. So he says, you are to eat. Many of us have no problem with that command. Go to the feast and eat. Many of us like to eat. We like to try different restaurants. We like to try different foods. We like to eat. I haven't heard anybody complain, well, you know, I hate that we have to go to the feast and eat. Most people say, I shouldn't have ate so much at the feast, or I shouldn't have taken in so much of that food. But the tithe is to be consumed. When it says to eat, he's talking about the tithe. He says, you shall take this set aside the tithe, and you shall eat before the Lord. And that word means consumed or to be consumed. So he said, it is to be consumed before the Lord your God. It's to be consumed at the festivals where God chooses to place his name. But notice it says clearly, where were to eat it? In the place where the Lord chooses to place his name. It's in that location. God has chosen to place his name in Oregon. He's chosen to place his name down in San Diego, in Hawaii. We realize he has chosen to place his name there. And again, there's locations, as we saw, and many locations around the world. But he chooses to place his name there. Having firsthand experience working with the feast for quite a few years now, almost 10, 11, or actually 12, 13 years, working and helping out with the feast, negotiating for the Feast of Tabernacles, both the venues and hotels. Each year is sometimes difficult, especially if you're going into a new area. It's difficult and almost incomprehensible for hotels and venues when you tell them that your members are going to be there for 8 days. And we need to negotiate these rates. When looking at hotel nights, they'll ask, well, what do you think the average number for how many nights your people are going to be here? And we said, for 8 nights, probably a night before and maybe one or two after. So 8 nights, but probably 9, 10, or 11 nights altogether. And they said, no, I mean, when your members come, how long do you think they will stay? And we said, 8 nights. They'll be here the full time. And again, they're almost surprised. And when we explain to them, they say, well, you mean they don't come like at different times, and some of them for 3 or 4 nights and some of them for 2 nights. And we said, no, they come for the full 8 nights. Now that helps us in negotiating. When we begin to negotiate places for the feast and they realize, oh, okay, like this year in San Diego, we have nearly 65 rooms at the Crown Plaza. 65 rooms for 10 nights, that's 650 room nights. That's why these hotels say, you know what, we'll give you the meeting space. We'll gladly allow you to meet here. We'll take care of you. Is there anything else you need? They take care of us because we do provide, especially at a lull in October, housing and take up many of the rooms at the hotels. And again, it is something that we work with. But they don't understand. We do it for 8 days. We don't pick and choose and say, well, you know, the first part of the feast works out great. It kind of goes over the weekend. I think I'll go the first 4 days. No, we go to the feast for the full 8 days. It's not a convention. It's not like something where we come and go. Unfortunately, sometimes members do that, and they will, the hotels will see individuals heading out or getting shuttles to Disneyland or other places rather than being at church. But for the majority of the congregation, we are there for the 8 days. Not only because it's commanded, but we want to be there and we're ready to keep the feast. We know it's commanded and we want to keep it. So he tells us in keeping it, in doing these things, we learn to respect and revere the Lord your God always. He said, you learn something by following the commands that I've given to you. You learn to respect and revere me, my plan, what I'm doing, and you learn to trust. Let's continue looking at this passage to see what else we need to do to be ready. Verse 24, he said, if the journey is too long for you that you're not able to carry the tithe, or if the place where the Lord your God chooses to place his name is too far for you when the Lord God has blessed you. Now, when we think of that agrarian society, if you were a sheep herder and you had 3,000 sheep, you take out that 300 sheep, I don't think you want to walk to the feast with 300 sheep behind you, heading to the Feast of Tabernacles, especially if it's a long journey. It'd almost be like the children of Israel where they left a path across the desert. They said with that many millions of people, it would have just killed all plant life as they made a path and made a trail through the desert. Now it says here, then if it is too far to carry, of course, if you're growing things, if you're a farmer and you've got all this wheat or you've got barley, and to throw all those bags on a cart and wheel them as 10%, he said, no, then you exchange it for money. You take the money in your hand and you go to the place which the Lord your God chooses. Today we receive our income in money, and we take a tenth of that. Usually take it out of the bank, or take it out of our savings, or take it out of where we have placed that money for the feast. And we go, it says, take it in your hand. And in the original, it says, grasp it in the hand as to not let it go. You can't just take it in your hand and go, now I can spend it. Well, not quite, not till we begin to get to the season. But he doesn't say, if it's too far, don't go. He says, no, if it's too far, trade all your income into money, lighten the load, and go. Verse 26, you shall spend the money for whatever your heart desires. Again, it's sad sometimes people complain, well, you know, the feast is 8 days, or it doesn't fall at a good time of year this year, or they can complain, well, I've had to tithe all year long. I haven't heard anybody ever complain, God says I have to go spend my money. I have to buy something for myself, whatever my heart desires, I have to spend my money. That's what he's saying here. He said, you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires. Again, that's something special. It's something that signifies what these days picture. But notice what he says to spend it on. Ox or sheep. Now, if you're sheep herder, that's probably the last thing you want to buy when you go to the feast. It's more sheep. But oxen or sheep, wine or similar drink, whatever your heart desires, and you shall eat. Now, he doesn't say you shall eat it there, but you shall eat. You shall consume before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. If your heart desires clothing, food, this year we have a dinner cruise. If your heart desires a new watch or jewelry, he says, whatever your heart desires. Now, some look at this and they say, well, it has to be consumed at the feast. So you can't buy clothing, you can't buy anything except food, and you have to eat it all before you leave or leave it in the hotel room. Now, when he says you consume, it is consuming and using up that tithe at the feast. But he says, whatever your heart desires. Now, that may entail clothing. You want to buy something nice to wear at the feast, or you want to buy something that you normally couldn't afford through the year. If it is within your budget, if it is within balance, he says you do that for whatever your heart desires. And again, if we can afford it, God says you need to do that. Now, if you go to the feast and you say, well, I've got $1,000 for the feast, I've got after my hotel, I've got $1,000 to spend, and this necklace is $950. I've got enough to buy it. And you're left with $50 to get through 8 days of the feast and eating. That's not in balance, and it's probably not a wise decision. But if it's something that you can afford and you can continue to be there as you're commanded to be for the feast, that's what God says. I want you to buy whatever your heart desires. I want you to spend it and realize it is a time of having abundance. Use the tithe money, or the money or saved goods, and use it during that time. Consume it. Use it up. Now, others have taken time over the years, or taken their tithes over the years, And because, and you saw the international maps, where we have places around the world to be able to go. Individuals have gone to their local fee site, given excess second tithe, but still saved back enough and saved it until the next year, and they're still consuming it at the place that God chooses, and they're still saving it, but they save a little bit to be able to go somewhere exotic the following year. And it's still being used at those particular feast sites. Now, that's rare, and on some occasions, though, the individuals have done that. As long as they're following that command to be there, and they're using that at God's festivals and where He places His name, that is what He has commanded us to do, to use it before Him and in His presence. But there has to be a balance. And again, we've talked about before, having a balance where not spending everything as we go through the feast, and then at the end of the feast we say, excuse me, can I borrow some money to get back home? I don't have any gas money, or my car is not working now, or I'm out of gas, or I don't have the money to get home. We have to plan it out, we have to budget, and we have to prepare physically, but we have to follow God's command and what He's telling us to do as well. And it's not wrong to provide for the family or provide with ourselves, whatever our heart desires. I want to go through some simple tips to help keep the feast properly. And again, this is both, there are some physical lessons from these and some spiritual lessons. One of the physical lessons is when He says, I want you to eat before the Lord your God, don't overeat before the Lord your God. People tend to eat too much or too much of one thing. I love dark chocolate, so I bought 10 pounds of dark chocolate, and now day two, I've ate 8 pounds of that dark chocolate already. Probably not a good idea. Not to overeat or overindulge in things that are going to eventually make us sick. Now, individuals have gotten sick before. I've already bought some dark chocolate. I've already prepared that, got it in advance. That's something I like. But I don't want to overindulge in it, and I don't want to get sick on it to where I can't enjoy the feast. But we're not to overeat. The feast is not a license for gluttony. If He says, go there and eat, it doesn't mean, well, then if my heart desires to overeat, I'm going to overeat. No, we still have to do it in balance. We have to do it within God's law. But we're to enjoy and to rejoice, and we do it in moderation. We're not to overdrink. Other places, God says, you're to buy strong drink or wine being something that is good, but we're not to overdrink. And in the past, it became a place for individuals to binge drink. Well, it's at the feast. It doesn't matter. It's the feast. I can do whatever my heart desires. I want alcohol. And they would consume it in large amounts. It became known to some as the Feast of Booze, B-O-O-Z-E, instead of the Feast of Booths. And we've laughed about that, and being in the church over the years, I've seen that. I've seen the extremes where people just went off the other side or the deep end of taking in too much of one thing. And again, that's not what the feast is for. I found it interesting, the Clark commentary about this particular verse. It says this is one verse that sufficiently shows the Mosaic law. Now again, they refer to it as a Mosaic law. This is Moses telling the children of Israel, and he did when God commanded him to. This is God's law to keep the feast. But it says sufficiently shows that the Mosaic law made ample provisions for comfort and happiness of the people. This is what God's saying. I want you to enjoy finer things. I want you to enjoy whatever your heart desires. I want you to enjoy food that you normally couldn't enjoy or take in and drink, but we have to do it in moderation. But He wants us to have comfort and happiness. Again, the ability to have 10% of our income and to spend that at the feast in a 8 to 10 day period is a time of abundance. And that's what it represents. The things that we normally couldn't have, the things we normally couldn't do, especially in a short period of time like that, God provides so we can have comfort and happiness. It was God's law that He established to be able to do that. And again, it is a blessing. It's probably something that He gets encouragement and enjoyment out of watching. You know, they've saved their tithe. They've done what they should. I want to see them excited to go there and use it. We have to get plenty of sleep. I don't know how many times individuals have gotten sick at the feast or just down and wore themselves down because they overloaded. They did too many things, or they stayed out too long. Feast is not a time to stay out extremely late and then come exhausted to services. We want to take in of the physical feast. But again, as was brought out in the Inn of Court, we need to spiritually be ready for the feast and ready for the right reasons to take in things that we should. Seems like every year there are individuals who do that. They stay out too late. They do things constantly through the feast, and they're running from one activity to the other, and they make it to services. And some of them sometimes make it to services. But individuals, it's interesting when you're speaking and you look out and you're talking to people. We know when you're rolling your eyes and heads bobbing and you're trying to stay awake. And we see that during the feast. We see it on the Sabbath. And that happens from time to time. We see people dozing. Feast of Trumpets after lunch, we came in here and it was warmer. I understand. That happens. I've been there before and had to fight that. It wasn't because I stayed up late. It's just that after that nice lunch and after sitting and now it's warm and the speaker just keeps getting softer and softer, and you start bobbing your head. So I'll try to change it up every once in a while and do that. No, but we see that, and especially at the feast when you have so many people and you're looking and people are lunging and trying to stay awake. We want to make sure that we're getting the rest that we need. Going out and staying out until 2 or 3 in the morning, because that's the only time of year we get to do that, is not what the feast is for. We're there to be taught. We're there to learn. It says learn to fear and to respect. We're not there to push it until we fall asleep. Next, we need to dress properly at the feast every day. When we dress as we do for the Sabbath, we dress our best. We want to go in the best that we have. We are coming before God just as we are on the feast day of the Sabbath. We are to dress in appropriate attire, something that's modest, something that's clean. And we also need to dress appropriately when we go out into the community. In whatever feast site we're in, we want to dress appropriately. Now, in California, especially on the coastline areas, you'll have people that go to the beach and then they come into the restaurants and sometimes it's like, oh, that's inappropriate for the beach, but let alone coming into a restaurant to eat. You see that. But we need to dress appropriately and make sure that we understand that we set an example. Especially in the hotel or the venue that's being used, they see God's people. Now, many times you may not hear some of those comments from the hotel staff, but afterwards, when we sit down and we do a review with the hotel, they said that your people are different. There's something special about them. I know we didn't do our job, or certain areas there were problems, but your people were so easy to deal with. We're so used to fighting with customers or having to go to battle and make things right. Your people were so easy to deal with. Again, they see that example, but they also see the example of dress. Now, in that situation, it is not just a physical dress that we want to put on. We also want to dress spiritually, put on that spiritual wear. Now, you say, well, that may sound a little bit odd, but there are scriptural references that talk about our clothing, being clothed in white, being pure. 1 Peter 5 talks about being clothed in humility, to be humble. Now, when we go down there for 8 days or 10 days, and we've got a lot of money, we want to be humble. We don't want to go in going, now I've got some money, you're going to do what I want, and you know I'm going to hold my tip out unless you do exactly what I want. I've got money now. No, we want to be clothed in humility. Colossians 3, verse 12 says, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on, like you would put on clothing, just like God says you put on the armor of God, which is a spiritual thing, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, and long-suffering, patience. These things go a long way as an example that we set, especially when we go into a community and there are many of us in one area of that community. Being patient in restaurants, especially when we go into an area and we break for lunch or right after services, people go to lunch, and our members will flood the restaurant and, oh, there's only two waitresses and they're running, they're trying to take care of all the tables. We don't want to sit there with our glass out shaking it because, you know, where's my water? I came here for service. This is horrible. I need to talk to the manager. No, being patient and realizing we're setting an example in the community. put on godly character traits before we go out and represent God and represent the church, not just at services, but even outside where we go. The last part of verse 26 says, "You shall rejoice, you and your household." Number three, we're commanded to rejoice. That's another one where I don't hear any complaints, where I can't believe God says we have to go there and rejoice. You know, God says, I want you to rejoice. I want you to be happy. I want you to enjoy the Feast of Tabernacles. And we have much to rejoice over. We're going to be at a feast site, at a place where God has chosen. And we do look at these particular feast sites around the world in places where individuals will have, as it said earlier, comfort and plenty. You know, plenty of places to eat. We want to give them things that they can do. We don't try to take people out to a commune in the middle of nowhere with nothing else, but we're just going to sit around and talk to each other and eat matzos. No, we take people to an area where they're going to enjoy the feast. Now, again, we can enjoy the feast wherever God chooses to place his name, but we try to give the individuals those comforts. And we have the opportunity, and we can rejoice, especially now at this age, and it may become more and more difficult as time goes along, but in a peaceful setting, in a peaceful environment, and with all of those things around us. We can enjoy the plenty that we have, using the tithe and what God has provided for us. We'll be dwelling with our families and many other families of the church, God's people. And again, that is a blessing. It's something we can rejoice. Especially in the West, we're scattered all over, scattered around Southern California, but the entire West and the whole western third of the U.S., as a matter of fact, is scattered quite a bit. But at this time of year, 8 days, we are all together in one place. You can get to know individuals from other parts of the country. We have an opportunity to fellowship, and it's something we can rejoice over. And we can rejoice that we're going to be taught, that our minds are going to be refreshed, and it is something that will get us inspired for the year ahead. It's something that will get us inspired and prepared and ready. As we're getting ready for the feast, it readies us for the fulfillment of the feast. Again, what is ahead in the future? The word rejoice, it says, you shall rejoice. That word rejoice means to brighten up, to be glad, and to make merry. Again, we don't tell other people, well, we're going to go to San Diego and make merry. No, we use different terms today. We're going to go to San Diego. We're going to enjoy the feast. We're excited. We're going to spend some time with our friends and family and extend that family as we meet other individuals. But we are to rejoice. Again, we're there to enjoy a happy and prosperous time. But we're also there to enjoy family. And whether all of our relatives are there or not is not what it means. When God says you and your household, it doesn't mean every family has to stay at one feast site, because now, as was shown, the feast sites, even just around the United States, are in different places. You may have family members that live in different areas of the world. You may have family members who are traveling to some of these exotic places around the world. When it says your house, it means your immediate family, those who are living with you, those within your gates, those who you're taking care of. So it says you and your household. Now, other places it says your sons and daughters. Well, I have a son and a daughter who both live in Texas. And my son, we took him to Australia. We've been able to travel mostly through the Feast of Tabernacles, but we took him to Australia 1 year, and he got the travel bug. He's like his dad. He likes to travel, likes to go places. And after going to Australia, and now he's grown and is on his own, and he's making his own money, he says, for the feast, we're going. Last year he went to Victoria. This year he's in Hawaii. He wants to go to Ireland. He's got plans of going to France and all these other things in the future. He wants to travel. And again, at the Feast of Tabernacles, I like to say, well, no, it says your household, so you have to come where I'm at. No, I can't make him do that. Trust me. He likes to travel, and so does his wife. So they are going to be in other places this year, like Hawaii. Now, that one thing that struck me funny is when Mr. Horchick said we didn't have any ministers apply to go to Hawaii. I would have taken them up on that. No, actually, I'm looking forward to San Diego, but this is the first time they haven't had an overabundance of people say, oh, yeah, I want to go to Hawaii if you need somebody there. No, we thoroughly enjoy San Diego, and I'm looking forward to that opportunity. Especially having it last year and then now going into this year, it is a it's an upgraded place from where we were before, and it is closer to other venues, other restaurants and things. So we're looking forward to that opportunity. But our whole family's not going to be there. My daughter and our grandbaby will be there. That's enough to make me happy as a grandfather. Have my grandbaby at the feast with us. My mother will be there, so the great-grandmother and the baby are going to be able to spend some time together. That's exciting. But God says, you and your household, your immediate family. And the feast is a time for family. It's also a time for us to grow together as a greater family, the family of God. And again, it's something that we are able to do through that period of time. Deuteronomy 12 and verse 12 says, you shall rejoice before the Lord your God, you and your sons and your daughters, your male and female servants, and the Levite who's within your gates, since he has no portion with the inheritance with you. So this is to be enjoyed by everyone within our gates. He says, everyone that is within your gates, within your ability, like the Sabbath day. On the Sabbath day, he said, you nor your sons or your daughters, nor your animals or anything that is within your gates is to work or to do labor on the Sabbath. Again, this is what it's talking about. Within your gates, your household, those you are taking care of. If you have your family with you, you don't say, well, it's the feast and I'm going, but you're going to stay home. You don't get to keep the feast. No, he said, you are to offer that and make sure that your sons and daughters, female servants and male servants, keep or are able to keep the feast. Everyone whom you were responsible. When we all come together in one place, we are within, and when God places his name at a feast site, we are within God's gates. And I don't know if you've ever looked at it that way, but God says, you are the church of God, the household of God. It says, you and your household. We are God's household, and we're going to be gathered in one place. That is God's household. That is being within the gates where God has chosen to place his name at that particular time. And again, we rejoice being able to share that time together and the opportunities that are provided. Many of my closest friends I developed the friendships with at the Feast of Tabernacles. We came into the church when I was 4 years old. And of course, there's some individuals I still know and still keep in touch with occasionally from 4, 5, 6, and 7 when we lived in Arizona, attended Tucson. You didn't get to meet a lot of people, but you met whoever's in your section of hundreds in the Feast of Tabernacles in Tucson. But I still remember meeting individuals, and over the years, the Feast of Tabernacles, because people come from all different areas, and this year we have people from all over the U.S. We have people from New York coming to San Diego. We have people from Florida, from Texas, from the north, all over the United States coming into San Diego. It's an exciting opportunity, but it is an opportunity for us to develop these friendships and close friendships. And again, over the years, that's where some of my closest friends have come from. We have 8 to 10 days together. We're learning the same information and hearing things. When we spend time with someone or we go through an experience with someone, when you experience things together, it causes a closer bond. You've shared something and shared an experience with another person. When we go to the feast and we share those experiences, this is something that develops closer bonds between individuals. And again, it gives us that opportunity. It also gives us the opportunity to serve together. And that is one area where I have actually drawn closer to individuals, is because we were serving together. Either serving on parking crews, and back then you get to wear the safari hats, and that was in Palm Springs, and 110 degrees going out and greeting people and directing them where to go as moisture runs down the face. But it is an opportunity to serve with one another. And again, serving together, I remember one particular individual that we served together on the information table. And this was at Branson years ago. And I knew him, but I didn't really know him that well. After the feast, we were very close friends. And we spent a lot of time together after the feast and kept in communication with one another, became close friends, and discussed many things together. And it was because of the feast. So next is, the feast is a time to serve. We have a lot of different areas to serve in, a lot of opportunities to serve, and it doesn't matter what feast site you go to, there are opportunities to serve. Many of our local brethren have volunteered to serve in various areas, and that's wonderful. Something we like to see, something I appreciate. Very thankful that we have individuals that do that, and sometimes year after year, they will continue to serve in those areas. But there's also many different ways to serve that many people don't consider. And some individuals serve year after year, and it's not that, well, you know, people don't notice. It does not go unseen. God sees that. And I try to see that because it is something, especially if I know something's taken care of and I know somebody's working hard, I try to recognize that. But it gives us an opportunity to serve over and over. But besides what I'll call structural service, besides being a department head or working in a department of the feast or working in a certain category of the feast, there's other service that we can do for individuals at the Feast of Tabernacles. Take somebody to dinner. Treat them to a dinner. That's one way of serving, and sometimes we can't do that through the year. We would love to be able to take other people out, but it's just not within our means. But at the feast, you may have the ability to do that, to take somebody to dinner. If you don't have a lot of money, you can ask somebody to dinner, and sometimes we're not able to do that, but we could say, you know what? I'd like to get to dinner with you. You know, would you like to go Dutch? And we'll go to dinner and just meet there. And, you know, we can each take care of our own meals, but we just want to spend it with you. If you do that, make sure you let them know in advance. I shared a story in Bakersfield, one Feast of Tabernacles. And it was towards the end of the feast. I think it was like the sixth day of the feast. We had some individuals. They said, we'd love to take you to the special restaurant. We want to treat you to, and I can't even remember the name of the restaurant now, and we were tight that year, and we said, okay, well, you know, I hate that people would spend that on us, but, you know, we'll go. So we go to this restaurant, and as a course, they order this first course. It was a 5-star restaurant, something very nice. He ordered a bottle of wine. He says, the wine's going to be on me. I was like, oh. That means the other half of the meal's on me. So I start thinking in my head, running through how much I've got. Went through, had our nice dinner, baked Alaska, and at the end I pull out my portion, and I had $2 left in my wallet after the portion of the meal and the tip. I was like, oh, barely had enough in my wallet to take care of it. I had to go to the bank and get some money for the last few days of the feast, take it out of the bank. But if you do that, make sure you offer. You say, you know, we would like to pay for yours, or let's go Dutch and let's just get together and enjoy a meal together. You can do it both ways. Buy a small gift or something to remember the feast by and give it to someone. I've already purchased, and I do this every year. I love doing this because it was something I remember when I was little. I've got a bag of Hot Wheel cars, and I love to go around and you see boys together or boys by themselves, and you stop and give them just a little car. And it's just a little thing, but I remember when I was a kid, I loved Hot Wheel cars. And they just see the excitement on their face and see them light up. Or crayons and a coloring book, you can give those to children. Possibly a notebook or a Bible. If you're sitting in services and you see somebody writing on loose paper or their Bible's falling apart, you know, if it's within your means, get them something like that. And again, helping them out in that way. Have someone to your room or meet them in the hotel for wine and cheese or another snack. You may not go out for a meal, but you may say, you know, I've got some things I'd like to get together with you this evening. In San Diego, there's going to be a lot of places you can do that. We have meeting areas. We have extra tables set out in places. There's an atrium area with a gazebo and some other places that have tables and chairs that we'll be able to use. Right outside the meeting space, there's tables and chairs, a big patio that will be able to be used for things like that. But just enjoying those kind of things together. Treat somebody to dessert and coffee. Maybe you can't afford to take them out for a meal, but if it's later in the evening and you're back at the hotel and you're running into somebody and talking to them, you know, let's go for dessert and coffee. Again, something that might make it a little bit more special. Many times when we go out and eat, when they come and they say, do you want dessert? It's like at Claim Jumper. Do you want dessert? If you've been to Claim Jumper, no, can't fit dessert. I don't even want to look at dessert after eating all of that at the Claim Jumper. But many times you're either too full or, dessert's $8 or $9 and I'm really not that hungry for dessert, I'll pass. But there's the opportunity at the feast to be able to enjoy some of those things and to enjoy desserts. And sometimes you can just go for dessert and coffee. We had a couple one year that we got together for, and we said, well, let's just go out for appetizers and dessert. Since we normally don't get dessert at the feast, we'll go out for appetizers and dessert and enjoy that. And we did. We just went out and had some appetizers, ordered some appetizers for the table, enjoyed that together, had dessert, and came back. Again, something that's inexpensive but still able to enjoy with others. For families with small children, offer to babysit one evening so parents can go do something special. If you have teenagers, again, sometimes the teens will do that. If there's another teen with them, especially they don't mind watching other kids and spending time together. But again, allowing parents to have a night off. And again, there's different ways of being creative. These are ways of serving at the feast. It may not be, well, I'm serving on the mother's room, or I'm serving in ushering or security or whatever it may be. You may best be serving individually and serving on an individual basis. It doesn't have to be seen. It doesn't have to be a department, but it can be service to others. In getting ready for the feast, and again, when I ask, are you ready? One of the more important things is, are you ready to learn? Are you ready to learn? And maybe you hadn't thought about the feast like that. It makes a world of difference if we go ready to learn and expecting to learn and excited to learn. It makes the feast different than when we're going and we're rushing around and we're busy and we're like, oh yeah, what time are services tomorrow? We want to go there to learn. We want to go there to receive the messages that are prepared. One of the things I learned years ago, and it has helped tremendously, and it's something that, it's a principle that applies not only in this lifetime, but it applies in something that's going to happen in the future. When you listen to services, when you listen to messages that are given, listen as though you are going to have to take that and teach it. Now, I learned that when I was in college. And they said, listen as though you're going to have to teach it. Oh, if I'm going to have to teach it, I have to know a lot. I have to know about the subject. You're not going to learn it all there in the classroom, but you learn and think, well, how would I teach that? How would I take those same principles or same ideas? How would I teach that? When you listen in thinking that you're going to have to turn around and teach it, you learn differently. You absorb more. You're more attentive. Now, I say it applies to the future because what we're listening to is 8 days of messages that are in regard to what our responsibilities are going to be in the kingdom of God. We are going to be teaching. We are going to be telling other individuals how to live God's way of life, what God expects. And so when we listen to 8 days of these messages, it's something that we will be teaching. We will have an opportunity to turn around and teach that. But go excited, ready to listen, ready to learn. Take notes. Go back and review those notes. Either that night before you go to bed or in the next morning, read through the notes that you took. They say you lose information within 24 hours. I think it's faster than that sometimes. But you lose that information if it's not retained, if you don't go back through and reiterate that information in your mind. So review your notes the night before, the next morning. Just go back over the notes and go, I want to remember that message. I want to remember what I learned from it. And, of course, we can discuss and fellowship and talk about the messages and about the millennium, about the kingdom of God and the plan that God has laid out. We talked about the Bereans recently having a willing mind or a mind that's wanting to learn, proving and reproving, taking what we've learned and go back and read through it. But again, if you're going to teach it, you're going to probably go, well, there's more to it I need to know than this. And later you can take those notes and study from them. But go back and prove it, reprove it, read through those scriptures. We can also be ready for services in physical ways. There are physical things that we can do and know in advance that we're going to prepare in this way to be ready. Be on time for services and Bible studies. Shows a willingness to learn because you're there, not just coming in the door last minute and throwing things down and taking a seat, but you're there and ready to learn. Shows a gratitude towards the opportunities to learn that are presented. Shows an attitude, and there's something about being there and being there on time that is respectful. Now, is that something that has become a regular habit for individuals to come into the feast late or come into Sabbath services late or holy day late? Plan to arrive in plenty of time before services begin. Plan to have time to fellowship either before or after services. And be seated in time for services to start on time. Certain feast sites will play a chime or they play a gong, and sometimes they have to play it louder and louder because people hear that and they start working their way and they see somebody else and they start talking. We can do that even without having noise to remind us. When we know that it's getting close to that time, go ahead and be seated and be ready for services. Turn off or mute your cell phones. This is something we want to do on a regular basis on the Sabbath. Now in here, and I've learned, you don't just mute it. I have to mute it and take it off of vibrate because you put it on these wooden benches. And if somebody sends you something, it vibrates on the wooden bench. That's happened in metal chairs. It's happened in other things as well. We want to mute it. We want to make sure that it's quiet and not disruptive. Years ago at the feast, we were at a Bible study at the Feast of Tabernacles. And we're sitting probably two-thirds of the way back. And in front of us are these nice three little old ladies. I say older. They're probably in their late 70s, early 80s. Very talkative, though, and friendly. So the Bible study starts, and they're sitting there all, you know, very quiet and taking notes. And then all of a sudden, one of their phones go off. Now, they had forgotten to turn it off. What people normally do when a phone goes off in church or unexpectedly, they get jittery, and she was trying to grab it and couldn't get it turned off. And it kept getting louder and louder. Now, it wasn't a ring, and it wasn't music. It was a rooster crow. And the rooster crow kept getting louder and louder. And finally, one of her friends grabbed it from her and turns it off. And, of course, the other two ladies, they were nice, but they were chuckling the whole time, watching her fumble with this phone, trying to turn it off. And this rooster crowing over and over and over and getting louder and louder. And, of course, the person speaking was smiling because he could hear that. And as it got louder, everybody kept turning around like, where is that coming from? But we want to make sure we turn it off to prevent embarrassment for ourselves, but also distractions that might happen at church. If you take notes on a laptop or a pad, turn the volume down. Sometimes people say, well, you know, I take note, my Bible's on this laptop or the Bible's on the pad. And, well, that's fine. But when you start it in services and the Windows logo comes on and makes all the noise, make sure the volume's turned down if you're going to use it for services. And again, we want to make sure that it's quiet in the area around us. Sometimes kids play video games, and usually if they're old enough to play video games, they're old enough to sit quietly and take notes. But if they play video games, make sure those are turned down, and make sure they're not sitting with a big screen with 10 people behind them going, what is that? What is he playing? Why is he doing this during services? It needs to be something that's quiet. And again, we don't want to distract individuals around us. Don't talk and pass notes. We've talked about this before where individuals it's okay if during service to say, especially with speakers who go fast, what was that scripture? Or what was that last point? But to sit and discuss things, you know, what do you think about that last thing? Do you agree with, you can't go into a conversation during services or shouldn't. It's distracting. Feel free to ask short information, but just very quietly and not to distract others. We don't want to have a whole conversation. Now, some of these things are very basic, but again, when you're speaking and you're in front of a congregation and you see all kinds of things, don't eat and drink during services. Sometimes individuals will have a bag of chips and sit there and crunch. And I thought, well, I can't hear that, but that has to be distractive, getting into the bag and the crunching of potato chips. Besides the fact we clean up afterwards and have to clean up after them. Having a snack for the kids is sometimes a necessity, and we always had that. Cheerios are great. Afterwards, you got to pick up all your little Cheerios that are left behind. And that's a necessity, but unless there's a health problem, we can usually as adults make it through services without having a snack. Again, taking a mint or something is a little bit different, but just sitting and eating is different. Or drink coffee before and after services, but we don't have to come in, especially when we have a big congregation like that, with a drink that either causes distraction because people are watching you drink, or it gets spilled. And usually the second, it usually gets spilled and it goes on to people's books or it goes onto the floor, or if it's a slanted room like this, then things go up to the front. Make sure that we're not bringing something in like that. There's going to be water stations at the back, and you can get a drink before or after services, but not bringing something up, especially glass, where it could get spilled. My wife was telling me about what she had seen one time. There was a water station at the back, and the person went back and scooped the ice with a metal scoop and poured it into the glass, which you hear the ching-ling-ling-ling, and then filled it up and came back and set it. They were sitting in front of her, so they set it on the floor. And she thought, oh, no, that's not going to last there. And she's watching as it tips and as he's bumping it with his feet and then spills it all over. Again, you watch that and you go, oh, we know what's going to happen. It's one of those things where, yeah, here's your sign. Here's what's going to take place. But spilling things during services, then you see people grabbing towels or grabbing things to kind of contain it, and it draws the attention of individuals instead of having the attention on the speaker, on the message. And many church areas ask that no food be brought into services at all, no food or drink at all. And some buildings don't even allow that. I like how Todd Carey put it in an article about the feast. And I don't know if many of you have had the opportunity with Mr. Carey to listen to his messages or to read some of the articles, but he was talking about the feast. And one of the sub-articles in this article that he'd written was Unhappy Children. He says, children are a blessing from God. Nobody likes to leave services during an exciting message, but our children may force our hand. As parents, we need to be aware that although we may be able to tolerate a little fussiness or whimpering, others may not be able to maintain their concentration. I've seen individuals in places where we had metal chairs, and the child took a toy and was banging it on the metal chair. Well, the parents thought, well, you know, I can put up with that. The people around, every time that hit the chair, they're flinching. That's distracting to others. And again, sometimes we have to make sure, if it's not just what we can put up with, we want to make sure that we're courteous to those around us and make sure we're keeping it quiet where they can enjoy the message. Parents should have a strategy for younger children when they become restless, taking them out of the meeting room if necessary so others can focus on the message. For this reason, many sites have a parents' room or a mother's room for individuals to go to. We will have a mother's room and a parents' room in San Diego. It's being available. The messages are going to be piped in there. They're going to have the message. So if you have to get up, you go to the back, and you're still going to receive the message. Now, this also applies to not just an unhappy child or a child that needs to be taken out because they're fussy or they're just can't sit still. If you need to change your child, sometimes parents are going, they need to go out, but you know there's only 30 minutes more. You may be able to put up with that. Other people around you may not be able to put up with that. I've seen people going, you know, somebody needs to go out. You want to make sure you take your child out. There's certain things that parents can miss or overlook that others don't. So we want to make sure that if we need to change your child, take them out before others grow faint. Don't feel that you can't miss a part of the sermon. I've heard individuals say, well, I can't leave services, even if, you know, anything that's happened to my child, because I'm supposed to be in services. I can't leave services. Or acting as though that was doing something wrong. It's better for you to take them out and then come back rather than disturb those around you. And again, many of the feast sites provide a place where you can take them and you're still able to listen to the message. Now, try not to get up and down during services. That's for all of us. Especially at the feast where you have seating and there's long aisles of 20 and you're sitting in the middle. And I've seen this where people get up and they work their way across. They go to the restroom 10 minutes later. They work their way back and then they sit down. And 15 minutes later, they're back up again and they work their way across. Those people that are on the edges, you know, and it's almost ironic. You go to the feast, everybody takes the edges of the seats. So is this reserved for small family, or families with small children, not small family, families with small children. And people will sit on the edges. And then they complain, well, you know, they drug their kid out of here 3 times. Well, that's why we allow those families to sit there so they can get out easily and be able to go out. But if you're sitting in the middle of an aisle, you don't want to keep getting up and going past people over and over during services. Make sure we use restrooms beforehand and not wander in the halls. That's another area, and if you've asked those who have worked in ushering before at the feast, where you talk to ushers and they say, there's people that just come out and they wander the hallways, or they'll stand and talk for 30 minutes to other people. They're not listening to the services, and some of them do it on a regular daily basis during the feast. Now, we don't want to make sure that we're not doing that. Now, if we have back problems or knee problems, getting up and sitting at the back or standing in the back, or if you have to walk out in the hallway because of backache, that's different. And again, there is stipulations when things come to that, that if you have those kind of problems, there's nothing wrong with sitting in the back or sitting in a more comfortable chair or walking or doing what you need to do. And again, having a medical condition and stepping out is necessary. But some like to walk the halls or, again, fellowship during that time. It's not the time or place to be able to do that. We want to be able to come early and stay late, but don't distract from others listening to the messages. And try to take care of all the needs before services so that you're able to enjoy services, but also able to provide an environment where others can enjoy services as well. Now, by all means, we need to physically prepare for the feast. Thinking about our cars, thinking about packing, thinking about food, thinking about clothing, what we need to take. Physical things are necessary in preparing and being ready for the feast. But it's far more important to be ready spiritually and mentally for the Feast of Tabernacles. Far greater things that are important, taking advantage of those opportunities of where we're attending. We need to soak up as much knowledge and teaching at the feast as we do sunshine and enjoy all the meals that are prepared for us spiritually as we do all those physical meals that we take in. Again, it's not all about the food and all of that excitement. That's part of it, and there's something to learn from that. But God has called us together, and he says, so that you may learn. And we are there to be taught. We're there to grow and to learn from the things that are being given to us. And it is an exciting time. It's one where we can rejoice. You know, God commands us to rejoice. If you do it the way God says, you will rejoice. It's going to be something that you rejoice over, and you're enjoying over and over the things that God provides. And we are told to rejoice. These are all just simple ways that we can enjoy the feast and also make the feast enjoyable for others. There's ways that we can serve, learn, and help others at the Feast of Tabernacles. But all of this is physical things to be ready, but also following the guidelines of spiritual things to be ready as well. And all of these things happen, God says, so that, or to the end, or in order that, you may learn to fear the Lord your God always.